Conspiranormal. I'm your host, Adam Sane.
I'm your co-host, Luke Reed.
Luke Reed. How you doing, Luke Reed?
Excellent, Adam. Excellent. Great weekend. Full of fun activities.
What'd you do this weekend?
Some skateboarding. Some staring off into space on my porch.
That sounds like fun, man. Did you expand your pineal gland?
I decalcified it a little bit. I think I'm making progress.
All right, awesome. So, Luke.
Yes.
I heard that you watched a certain film this weekend. Can you tell me about it?
Act of Valor. It inspired me.
What is Act of Valor about?
It's about a bunch of Navy SEALs who get together to take down an operation for contraband and terrorism with jihads and their bullet vests, and they're going to cause mass panic in America, and the heroes save the day.
Isn't that the movie that has actual real Navy SEALs in it?
Real Navy SEALs.
Wow. And did you make you feel like you wanted to go join the Navy SEALs?
Oh, yeah. I'm ready to go do some shooting right now. I'm amped. I'm still amped from yesterday.
You didn't think in any way that that might have been like a propaganda movie or anything?
Absolutely not. No.
Because who were the bad guys in it? In the movie?
The jihads.
The jihads? Were they actually called the jihads in the movie?
Yes.
Wow. And what were the jihads doing?
They were purchasing vests that had explosive ball bearings in them, and they planned an attack on America in several different places to cause pandemonium and fear.
Were they going to blow all the gas stations up at the same time in the movie?
That would have been more interesting. Yeah, more interesting plot shift there.
You know, that was one thing I heard a long time ago on quote-unquote conservative talk radio, was that all the Muslims, that they all owned gas stations, and they were all going to blow them up all at the same time.
Even though they're Indians.
Mass chaos.
Even though most are Indians.
Yeah, but that's besides the point. I mean, what do we know about geography and culture?
They all look the same.
So, anyway, Luke, I understand that you brought our guest in.
Yes, very special guest today. I'm just going to call him Trav. I'm going to leave the last name undisclosed.
And I believe that Travis is related to you.
Yes, that's my brother.
The better looking brother.
Your bro. Yeah. Your real bro.
That's debatable.
Bro. It's good to be with you guys today.
Well, Travis, tell us about yourself and what you believe, and we'll go from there.
Just a normal guy, just do the normal stuff, go to work.
9 to 5.
9 to 5, come home, but I'm interested in a range of topics, you know, just a lot. I read a lot about language and philosophy, dreams, things like that, ancient civilizations. I like to read a lot about physics and things like that.
A multitude of topics.
Multitude of topics, occultism, range of things.
Can you tell us what started you down kind of like getting into all those different kind of things, how you like grew up and such?
I did, yeah. Well, I used to go out a lot and kind of just waste my time, you know, and I came to a point where I felt like I needed a deeper understanding of things, and I found coming across a few things, you know, that kind of stirred my interest. Like, I think one of the first was Zechariah Sitchin, his books. Yeah, I was interested in them for a while and got into that kind of stuff about ancient cultures.
Jim Morrison, too.
Yeah, I really like Jim Morrison. He, you know, all the things he sings about, his lyrics, that really spoke to me. And I was interested in things. I read a lot of books he read, you know, like Nietzsche and different, mainly for philosophers and stuff like that.
Okay, well. Yeah, so how did that lead you into Eastern philosophy and such?
I just went through the range of things. Yeah. Basically, what I was searching out is immortality, how to have superpowers and all sorts of stuff like that, you know. That's what I'm after. There's a movie, talk about movies that just come out, I think, on DVD about a month ago. It's called Chronicles, and it's about some kids that
I've seen
have
that
these superpowers, you know. And I think that really is possible.
You think the superpowers, like physical superpowers, are possible?
I do.
Like, how is that, like, possible?
Well, that's a long subject.
Well, we got some time, so let's go.
Plenty of time.
Let's go into it.
Well, it
take us down the rabbit
hole. It's been
my
experience that the things that are the most familiar to us are the things we ignore the most, and they're actually the most important things. Most of which is language and dreams. There's two sides to everybody. You know, there are inner and the outer. The inner being deals with dreams, and the outer being deals with, you know, outside things. And how we understand all those outside things is through language. So that's how I kind of differentiate the two. And there's always this interaction between the two. And we don't understand it. The reason we don't understand it is because of language.
That language is, as we have it now, is limiting in a way?
It limits your mind. There's a philosopher wrote about linguistics, or actually two of them. They call it the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis. And basically what that is that you speak the same language you think, and you think the same language you speak. There's no difference between thoughts and language. Language determines what you think. I mean, there's no escaping it. You can't, you know, there's no way out of it. It's a continuum. The more you think, the more it replicates itself. You can't think yourself out of it. And all the, you know, the great, the yogis and the Eastern philosophers, they tell you, you know, basically you've got to stop thinking. And that's the purpose of meditation, to reach higher states of consciousness.
So, like, breaking down a lifetime of being conditioned by language and associating these words with what we see, a reversal of that.
Exactly. We think we're advancing, we read all this stuff, but basically what you're doing is just complicating things. There's a system called Advaita, and basically the purpose of this system is just to forget crap, just to forget everything, and that can bring you back to the pure point.
Right.
Before... To really understand all this, you have to really start at the beginning, you know, and basically our understanding that most people is, you know, the Bible and Genesis, when it talks about language, how it was given to man by the gods. They saw men, they were nothing that they tried to do was impossible for them. They didn't have a language prior to this. You know, you're familiar with?
Yes.
And they come down and saw that they would become like gods if they did not confound them with language. And so they basically put language on men so that they couldn't understand one another, so that they could advance to the level of gods. That's my understanding.
This is the Tower of Babel story.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we know that, like most of the stories, early stories of the Old Testament, they were taken from earlier sources, mainly Sumerian. And the Sumerian story, it paints it a little different. It's very similar, but they basically say that language was a magic. It's like it was an incantation, a spell that you could put on someone, and it would take them out of the pure state and make them confused. And that's where we're at today.
Right.
So what was the, I guess, lack of a better term, the primeval language?
We don't know, because there's no way to know. There's the only way we can understand it was with our current language. I mean, you can't step outside of it. To unlearn language is basically you're talking about isolation and just years of isolation. And
wouldn't the original language be telepathy?
That's the thing. We don't know the original language, but we do know that it didn't involve, you know, speaking. And understanding things through concepts like we do today. They tend to think, and there's a major a philosopher about this. His name's Julian Jaynes. He wrote a book called The Breakdown, The Origin of Consciousness and the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind. And in that book, he basically states that prior to people learning language, that they were schizophrenic, that they didn't understand themselves in terms of being a person. That their thoughts were coming from other people, other gods. As you know, when they heard thoughts in their head, they didn't think that that was their thoughts. And like even everything, their actions, like they said they come from a certain center, like the friends or the news, they had names for them. And they would channel like whatever was from that center, and they would ask the gods to put their strength in there until so that they could achieve something. And they had a completely different conception of themselves. And it's really hard to stop and think what that would be like right. for us today.
To tell yourself that none of my thoughts or actions actually belong to me, but are just being translated
right.
to a higher being.
Right. Well, see, nowadays, we think schizophrenics are, you know, diseased. But back then, they were saints, you know, and priests. They were the people that everyone looked up to for, you know,
direction. They were highly regarded as being somehow touched by the gods, at least in Greco-Roman, the classical age.
Mm-hmm.
They would have been regarded as being somehow touched by the gods. Epileptics were the same. That there was somehow something special about them.
Now, they've known for a long time it's not a disease.
Yeah.
But, of course, to say it's not a disease is a completely different direction than all society is going. To say that language is the problem and that your thoughts aren't coming from yourself, that changes everything. I mean, there people's personality, we're not going to give that up. That's the difference between monotheism and polytheism. When you've don't think you're a person and you've got all these ideas that all this stuff that's happening to you is outside of yourself, and if you jump from that to you're just one singular person, I mean, that's a complete change of perspective. I mean, it changes everything.
Is that change good to you or bad?
It's good for people to develop physically, for technology, for outward things, but we all know that that doesn't lead to happiness, and all these problems we face, there's never a solution to it because we're sure. always incomplete, missing that other part of ourselves we'll never understand because of that barrier of language.
You mentioned Sitchin's work. How did that influence you, or is that something that you've kind of kind of gone beyond now?
Sitchin, I tend to look at that.
Because I have read him, too.
The earliest writings, I focus on those because I see them as the purest forms of thought. Because, like I said, if language is a problem, and as you advance with language, you get farther away from the purity, from the original state, the first things that come out, the first writings are the purest, is the way I look at it. And when you look at what they say, according to Sitchin, which I can't understand, you know, Sumerian in
sure.
cuneiform, but
yeah.
just taking for granted that Zechariah Sitchin knows what he's talking about, he says that the Anunnaki basically came to Earth and took some sort of monkey of some sort and took and interbred that with their own DNA and made man.
So you would say that, I mean, you would say that the Anunnaki were physical beings?
That's hard to say.
That's up in the air.
That's hard to say. I don't know for sure. Because if they were in a state of consciousness where things that could affect them, like from the dream world, you know, if they were more in tune to that other world, it's hard to say if advanced beings of an advanced consciousness could not contact them from that other world and they conceived them as being real.
Once they pass too much into that spectrum, they start to become less physical and more ethereal.
Well,
transdimensional beings, no
right. An advanced being, it's no stretch of the imagination to think that they could possess a human body. And so, in effect, a god could take form in a person, and basically, you know, instruct other people through a person, through possession.
AKA shamanism.
So, yeah, which I would say is probably the root of at least polytheism, possibly really what is now really just called religion as a set of beliefs. But That is interesting that you say that.
But there's that, that's the thing though. It's hard to say. I do believe though that beings have been here because, I mean, obviously if they only possessed people, where would they come up with these crazy drawings of these insectoid looking creatures and all this stuff in the Sumerian art that you see? It's
sure.
It's really depictive of bird-like creatures and of things like that. It's hard to say because that's the thing about mythology. You've got all these situations and people want to just say they're just a myth. But to these people, I really believe it was real to them.
That they were actually seeing these things.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think would have been that there's something, maybe some other kind of genetic tampering that was going on at
that's
the time?
Quite possible.
Or was this something that was influenced by drugs?
Zichin talks
possibly?
About at length, I believe. Is they were kind of just experimenting with different DNA of animals to see what they could come up with. And
Monkeys, apes would definitely be the most suitable on a planet, you know, pre-humans to construct further.
I believe the Sumerian account because several things. In their art, it shows the planets all laid out way before, what is his name, Galileo found them. Yeah. You know, just so many things that, you know, it's hard to just say the Sumerians were all just making these myths and they didn't really mean something to them. They built these temples to gods that didn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, supposedly they knew there was a lot more that they probably knew about astronomy. A lot of ancient peoples knew so much more than we give them credit for.
Yeah.
And I don't know where that knowledge would have come from.
Exactly.
But it is interesting that you bring that about the trans-dimensional aspect of it. That these probably weren't physical beings, which is where I fall on that.
Yeah, I've been very interested in the dream world.
Dream world?
Yeah, I've been lucid dreams, astral projection, that kind of thing. Just all around us, all the time, there's this other dimension. It doesn't ever, even though we wake up from it and go in this physical world, it's always there around us. And so I really think there's other beings that can affect you through that dimension. And I believe that dimension's connected to other dimensions, and that it's vast.
I don't know if you've heard our interview with Prime.
I told him a little bit about it.
It's someone that we know, and he actually was here in the studio just like you are now, and he had a lot to say about what he does on the other, like what he terms as the other side, quote
astral
unquote.
Projection. Yeah. He astral has a new projection. Story pretty much every day.
Yeah, like we were actually hearing it today. Yeah. About some other things. what are some of the things that you've experienced with your experiments?
My experience of the dream world is that it is a place where you can create whatever you want based on your ability to focus and your will. Your will affects it. Your current state of awareness, you know, your emotional state, things that may be are problems in your life, they tend to take over your dreams. So you have to come to this really calm state to really affect the dream world. It's a complex subject. I've spent several years taking a note of everything that occurred in my dreams and just basically learning what my own symbols were in my dreams, like metaphors. And so you see, there's a certain way you can just understand things about yourself. Yeah,
and there's often reoccurring symbolism in your dreams.
Exactly.
That kind of lays groundwork to some kind of point.
The thing is that everyone's subconscious is always in the dream world, and we're all linked through that medium. How, I don't know. But we're all linked, and that's the thing about remote viewing, that you can affect people through this dream world. It's another dimension of reality that everybody could be aware of if they knew how.
Is that something that you've tried, remote viewing?
It's difficult because it takes a lot of training and dedication, just that one thing. But it's I'm really interested in it.
Talk about the time floating out and going through the wall between astral bedrooms.
Well, when you're in a lucid dream, for me, it's been the easiest way to astral project. And from that state, you can pretty much just choose what you want to do. You can, like, imagine something that will appear, or you can choose to just kind of explore your surroundings as you know them physically, and kind of, you know, float through walls and just look through things. But you have to understand that that's the thing about the dream world, that everything that you imagine, you're creating it. It's you. I mean, it's a space where everything you've ever imagined or know is there.
Okay, that's interesting, because Prime really sees it, he saw it as more like an independent world, external from yourself. But what you're saying is that you kind of make your own reality.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing.
And you control that reality.
And but there's also the limitation there. I mean, we see ourselves as these individuals. We think we're a singular person, but actually in the dream world, we're this big conglomerate of multiple things. We're not just one singular thing, and it's a hard for our brains to comprehend that, to go from just being one person to being something that's multifaceted.
On the other side, you're a little indefinite cloud.
Yeah, it's, you know, you're really nothing but you're everything. It's hard to grasp.
That is really hard to grasp. Luke has told me too that you've done, like, when you were younger, that an experiment with an isolation chamber.
Yeah,
I'd kind of go into what happened.
I've always been really interested in John Lilly and his works. He's the one that pioneered the sensory deprivation tank, and basically what that is, it's kind of like a spa that you lay in. You lay in Epsom salt that's heated to the exact temperature of your body, and the purpose of that is so that you'll float weightless in it. And you can't feel your body. Essentially, it gets rid of the five senses. You can't feel, smell, see, or hear, or feel anything in your body, because the salt is the same temperature around you. And basically, what it achieves is what meditation is meant to. Some people say that it takes 7 years of meditation to get to a point of just what a sensory deprivation can do immediately. You just lay in there, and it automatically wipes away the senses. And so, but what you're left with is an open door to the dream world, and that's the advantage of it.
What did you see? Did you see anything in that experience?
It's a state of relaxation. As you start to fall asleep, the dreams take over. For me, I don't know if it's the same for everybody, but I start to. There's like things that occur around me. People will be talking here in a conversation, and I can get sucked into that, or there's something, you know, it's like it's hard to explain. There's several different things occurring, and you just get deeper into that, and it basically your like mind is kind of does its thing, and you just kind of observe it, and it just kind of plays out,
progresses
what your experiences, your things that are important to you, you know, dreams, essentially.
Yeah.
Would you say maybe it was too much, too fast, in addition to also the substances?
I mean, it's hard to fall asleep. And like John Lilly, his thing was that he took a mushroom, psilocybin, in the tank, and I also experimented with that. And to me, it was a little too much. It was kind of scary, actually.
So it was kind of a real terrifying experience.
Yeah, it was kind of terrifying. It was. There was a movie called Altered States that kind of covers John Lilly's works. Kind of, I don't think they really mention him in the movie, but
You didn't
transform into an ape. But the thing with psilocybin is that it's not a drug that you want to take every day. It basically what it does is eliminate your ego, and it makes you aware of that multifaceted part of yourself that you're not really aware of usually. And you get these ideas that you would never, ever get. And it's a really a form of self-psychoanalysis. And it's really intense, and it's not something you want to do all the time. And when you combine that with the sensory deprivation tank, it's a little much to
overload.
Handle. Yeah, it is.
Luke told me that you did something to it after you got out of it.
After the bad experience, the bad trip, what did you do to it?
I got rid of it after that. It became too much to keep up with.
Put it in the front yard and shot at it?
Oh, yeah. I burned it up. I built a fire inside it.
So it was that crazy an experience that you felt that you had to kind of purge it in a way?
I enjoy experiencing things that you normally don't encounter in day-to-day life. I like to step outside, but I also want to be comfortable. To me, that was a little too close to like being dead.
Just like the ayahuasca experience that I've been studying recently, once you get that first bad trip out of the way, they describe it to get easier as it goes along. Each trip gets easier and easier, and then you feel more of like a euphoria versus facing all of your demons.
Well, I could see that psilocybin, I think, is one of the quickest and easiest ways for people to come to a level of self-awareness. It really forces you to.
As we've said before on this show, the ayahuasca experience that we've talked about with seeing certain beings is very similar to, say, the like alien abduction experience, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word. And have you ever seen anything like that?
On mushrooms?
Your experience?
My experience with mushrooms is that there's a certain pattern that occurs. If you stare at things that, say, like a carpet that has like a design in it, anything, it'll start moving within itself. It's like you see this kind of fabric of creation, and the more you stare at it, you'll lose yourself in it. And that's when the trip begins.
You begin to see things that people are not normally going to see.
The thing is, you don't know. It depends on your psychology, where you're at, your emotions, all kinds of factors. It's hard. Everybody is a little different, but it's usually pretty intense. But that depends, of course, on how much you take.
Well, what would be your most twofold question here? What would be your most negative experience, and what would be your most positive?
I took 21 fresh mushrooms one time.
Whoa!
And fresh mushrooms are a lot more potent than dry mushrooms. I could not move. I laid on the couch, and I could not speak. I was speaking in tongues. Whoa. And I thought I was going to die. And what I was speaking about a moment ago with the patterns, I didn't have to look at something. The whole wall was doing that. The whole room was just flowing into itself. You can sit in a chair, and it feels like you're turning around and looking in another direction. It's just like you just come out of yourself, and it's a lot of strange things happen. You'll think, like I said before, think things that you would never think before. And that leads me to this conclusion about mushrooms, that there's like a being, like a mushroom being, and it just basically like takes over your consciousness, and this just directs you, and you're just a silent observer. You're just along for the ride.
Well, that kind of brings into other things that we've talked about too, that like a scientist would say that when you do something like that, that it's just the chemicals affecting your brain.
Right.
The same with some other experience with experiments that have been done with EMF, mm-hmm. electromagnetic field.
Yeah.
Influencing the brain.
Right.
And people seeing gray figures and such like that.
They're right, but
other would say that, but I look at it as being that, you know, those things are just mediums that are allowing you to is tuning your brain into a higher state, basically, to something.
We had to realize what animates the brain.
Yeah.
And that's the spirit. And sure. we know that you can see that with Kirlin photography and all other sorts of advancements, I'm sure.
Could you explain that, Kirlin photography?
I don't know. I guess it's named after the gentleman that made this sort of camera that that they can take a picture of people and
see their
an aura around people. And they know that based on certain emotional states, it turns colors.
It uses an electromagnetic plate as a it captures the electromagnetic energy in the room, and subjects place their fingertips on top of the pad, which got the best results in actually viewing their auras. And they had several different test subjects in the first curling experiments, and they had a loving couple who actually, you know, were in love with each other. And then they had a couple who disliked each other, and the camera actually picked up a difference in the color of aura, red for the ones who were angry at each other or whatever, and blue or yellow, I believe, for the ones that were in love.
Well, they can have several different colors. It's there could several combination of emotions. It's and I think that has a lot to do with telepathy, as we were speaking with earlier, and in the olden times, that people probably were able to see that somehow and kind of just understand people's emotions based on that. I think dogs have that ability. They seem to know how our emotional states are.
Sure. Like animals are more attuned to,
I think
to
they
the,
can see
the
that,
world.
The aura.
That's interesting.
Let me throw something out at you about, as you mentioned the Bible before, and the story of Adam and Eve in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you believe that's a metaphor or you believe that that's a,
well,
a
that's
literal
the
thing.
The,
you know,
the Bible's complex because it's so vague. I mean, it's you can interpret it so many ways, and I mean, there's a literal interpretation. There's a deeper interpretation into the symbolism. You know, it means several things, and then it's taken from earlier sources, so you have to sort that out.
It's more complex than people give it credit for.
I just it's easier just to bypass it.
Well, what do you think about the story in that the fruit? From the tree of was the tree of knowledge,
mm-hmm.
and the passage where it says that if you drink it, if you eat it, you shall be as gods. What do you think as a metaphor? What do you think that refers to?
That's complex. I think the food of the gods is the manna, the white powder gold, what they call it today, orbitally rearranged
monatomic
elements. And the tree, I think that's alluding to, like, the tree of life. It's like a structure. It's not an actual tree. It's Jewish mysticism.
It's the Kabbalistic tree of life.
Exactly. Yeah. And basically what that is referring to is the centers that I mentioned earlier. It's where certain actions occur from that. It's, you know, it's basically the structure of man, of his spiritual body. And Adam and Eve, that I think that's an allusion to Eridu, like they were speaking of Zachariah Sitchin and his books, that it was, I think they took that where they could, from earlier Sumerian sources where they were genetically manipulating.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of, you know, similarity between the Sumerian Babylonian myth and the Bible.
I think the food of the gods, the orbitally rearranged monatomic elements, I think they're going to play a big part of our future soon. And I think it's slowly coming to terms. People are starting to get into that and learn more about it. It used to be an obscure subject, but I think a lot more people are starting to understand what that is nowadays.
Yeah, and you told me once that the whole process of alchemy is to create orme.
Exactly. Well, the thing is that in ancient times, all the gods were eating it, and they had humans to make it for them. And the ones, the select few humans that got to eat it were the kings, you know. And this was reserved for the elite. And basically what this does is turn you into a super being, is my understanding of it. I've never took it, the substances, but...
How does that, as you mentioned, the elite, how does that, what do you think about the New World Order and those
things? Well, basically what we're talking about here is exotic matter, which is the most expensive substance on the planet.
Hmm.
I mean, just, I forgot the exact amount of what it's worth, but one bit of dark matter is, I know, worth millions. I mean, it's...
Like dark matter is actually here on Earth? Monatomic gold
that's
the same as dark matter?
That's where my interest in physics and quantum physics and all that stuff comes in, is these people nowadays with this CERN and all this stuff that they're working with, exploding these particles together, they're after the building blocks of the universe. They're after the food of the gods and all that.
The God particle in the
exactly. accelerator. They're after that stuff. I think they've come to advancements. They're slowly letting us know about them because they don't want people to know about them because it's some big stuff.
A couple of the ingredients that I found about Orme are extremely hard to get a hold of, like rare metals like aluminium and rhodithium or something like
they're
that.
They're made from precious metals. If you've ever read the transcripts from David Hudson's lectures, he talks a lot about the metals it comes from and how it exists in certain plants, like carrots, for instance, grapes. And I've heard stories just from here locally where herbalist people had cancer have went to them for a cure, and they made them drink a large amount of carrot juice, and that it cured them of cancer. And just because of these, just in a small state that then those substances were in that.
Of course, they would have to be 100% natural, non-GMO.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I mean, organic.
Mm-hmm.
How does that affect? I mean, how does that affect humanity? Is that something that only elite would have, and
well,
that everyone else is just basically?
That's the thing. That was what the whole goal of alchemy was, to figure out how to make that stuff. And evidently, way I understand is most of the alchemists were also philosophers. They were, you know, big into the inner worlds I was just talking about and stuff like that. And it seems to be that you had to be at a certain state before you could even produce the stuff. I don't know how that comes into play exactly, but
yeah, alchemy was a little more than just chemistry.
And even in Jewish mysticism, you'll read their books that before you can undertake the Kabbalah and things like that, that you had to go through this process of cleansing and find your spiritual self. I think that has a lot to do with it.
It seems to me like enough time in the spirit world and in the dream world, and enough advancement, you know, after years and years of self-discipline, that you would be preparing yourself to take the Orme in that, in combination with that.
Well,
see, if you just took it without the preparation.
The way I look at the spiritual, it's like everything everybody's ever done is there. Everyone's experience. Anything you want to know, you can know instantly. I mean, anywhere you want to go, anything you want to see. I mean, it's all knowledge is there instantly that you can get to. I mean, how can you not figure things out with that? I mean, you can, Aleister Crowley, they said he could astrally project as a child, that he just had that ability. And he was accused of killing somebody from overseas through his astral body. I mean, it's the power that a person could have if they could learn to lucid dream, to astrally project, is enormous. And it's no stretch of the imagination to think the more powerful you become in that inner world, that won't somehow spill over into the outer world.
That's what occult science is pretty much all about.
Exactly. That's what they're all after.
What is your views on, as we mentioned the Bible before, what are your views on Jesus, on Christ?
Jesus, to me, is basically a symbol of the astral body. It says in the Bible, the only way to God is through Jesus. The only way to higher worlds is through our spirit body. Basically, he's just a symbol of that to me.
So you see it as a way the way the Gnostics would have seen it.
Yeah, he's just, I'm not certain if he ever did exist. There's a lot of speculation. You know, he was very similar to a lot of people that lived before him. His story was, you don't know for sure, but basically it doesn't matter. The end result is the story, and the path to enlightenment, you know.
Yeah, there's a couple of sources that I would say are pretty reliable, as far as if you even want to take the Gospels out, that are pretty reliable that there was someone that existed. So,
right.
I mean, I don't think that's I don't know if that's debatable, but
well, that's the thing. I mean, does it matter today? The end of, the result is our, what are we going to get out of that story? Is it going to help us? Are we going to find Jesus in ourselves? And to me, it just, the Bible just confuses people more than it helps them, because they're just trying to figure these stories out, or they just take them at face value and don't even try.
Could you elaborate on that, how it confuses people?
Well, symbolism, metaphors, basically what dreams revolve around, is in depth. It's hard to understand what somebody's symbol means to them and try to interpret that. And so basically it's, you'll have to understand your own symbols to understand somebody else's symbols. It's a
yeah, you're trying to put a religious experience on paper.
Yeah,
basically
it's hard to interpret.
And to me, that's why it has such credibility today, because those people, those disciples, probably did the best. There probably have been plenty of other people before them that tried to document it but did not do as good of a job and could not relate as well.
That's the problem with language. You never understand anybody. All you can understand is your version. We're all trapped inside our brain with language, and it's endless. The more you try to escape it, the deeper you get.
It just becomes a morass, huh?
You just have to stop thinking.
Well, but what happens when you stop thinking?
Well, you'll either fall asleep or you're going into the dream world.
Huh. Very interesting. You want to ask Luke? it's ponderous in here right now.
Might have to edit this section out. Gonna come up with some new topics.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. Very interesting discussion. Luke was also telling me that you're into like the Eastern philosophy.
Kundalini. All that. Yeah, that
especially.
I know you studied a little bit into Taoism and dualism.
Oh yeah,
Kundalini.
I've looked at almost every, you know, culture and their occult beliefs and their systems that I could get my hands on to. And I try to like pick and choose what I liked, what seemed to work the best out of most of them. And the thing is with these other cultures that we're just so far removed from them that it's really hard to work that into your lifestyle and make it a part of you, just because, you know, you just really don't have a connection with it.
Yeah. You weren't born in that culture.
Exactly.
So.
But you know, there's definitely a lot of knowledge in those systems.
Find your center and realign your chi.
You're really harshing my mellow right now. Panflute West lessons are next Wednesday.
Just
need to skip the meditation and build a depth tank.
get your Peruvian flute CDs, lemongrass.
But you know, I've always, you know, just like he was talking about, I've always thought it was a very good way to acquire knowledge about religion and your own set of spiritual beliefs by going around to all the cultures and first, you know, doing a little bit of studying for each one, you know, yeah. Buddhism, Taoism, just going around Hinduism, all of them, and just reading even just a little bit of it and picking up things that will help you make a final decision. Instead of just sticking to one, you know. Yeah,
being open-minded is very important.
Right.
Well, it leads me, Luke was mentioning things about a belief that you have in duality. And can you kind of explain
the Jekyll and Hyde. It's everybody's
good and evil
separated into two parts that can't communicate. And as I mentioned, the reason we can't communicate is because they speak different languages. The only way is overcome that is to.
That is interesting. I mean, do you believe in an ultimate good and an ultimate evil, or do you see that it's the lines are blurred?
That's a difficult subject. See, you get into the God concept and all that, and good and evil. It's to me, you need to keep it simple. Don't try to understand things that we can't comprehend. Don't hold strong opinions about things you can't fully comprehend, because that's what keeps you from having an open mind. I mean, we can never understand God. That's impossible for us. I mean, it's just out of our range. So it's hard to say. I really don't know. But I would like to think that God is not some singular person or being. It's like a force. It's like everything. Sure. And to think that God cares about certain small things that are very important to us is just, it's really naive. To me, it is.
So you wouldn't say that God has an influence in our lives, so to speak?
Of course. I mean, it's everything to me is God.
Sure. Every thought, every action, everything. Every physical item.
It is a part of everything. It's, you know, it's the our breath. It's everything that animates everything. It is
the universe.
Do you believe that there are good entities and bad entities?
I do, definitely. Yeah, I believe in the realm of angels and demons, and I think that has its counterpart here in the physical world through thoughts and emotions. I think essentially what thoughts and emotions are on the inner world is basically angels and demons. That's what they are. I mean, we've got our own inner world, and all this is playing out there. Yeah, there's a war within us.
So we, in a sense, create our own angels and our own demons.
Well, that's the way I look at it, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that's the right way.
While that may be the recessive reality for us, like the dream world, that could be another dimension's prime reality. You know, that could be our physical world that we're sitting in right now could be the angels and demons dream world, you know, reversed on each other, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
that's the best way I can explain.
I think that makes sense. Yeah, I think that makes sense. Yeah, trying to figure out where to go. Help me out here, Luke.
Well,
we could talk about Act of Valor for the next 30 minutes.
These mind control things, basically what they're trying to do is get people influenced by demons. And the way they're doing is that forcing them into these emotional situations, and like through torture. And
okay.
I mean, that's to me, that's what they're doing. They're creating that in them.
I think there's a lot of that going on right now. I think
definitely.
The things that we've been seeing over the last month with the guy, as we mentioned last week, with the guy eating the other guy's face in Miami.
Yeah, that's right.
There was one that was really weird that happened. And actually, this happened, you remember the Gabrielle Giffords shooting last year when she was wounded? In the same parking lot, there was a guy that was actually a professor at the same school that the guy, Gerald Loftner, who shot Giffords, that he went to. He's actually, I think he's a professor or some kind of assistant professor. And he's sitting there in the parking lot, and he's rocking back and forth saying, "We are the ones that have been chosen," or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I'd have to look it back up exactly what he was saying. But he's just sitting there rocking. He wasn't, you know, being violent towards anyone, but just very strange, and it makes me think, like, well, first of all, what's going on at that school? Because I do believe that these people can be used for, you know, assassinations.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Control assassins.
I think through history there's been lots of that going on.
For sure.
And I think a lot of things now, and that topic you just mentioned, I think that was purposely probably created for gun control. As we've seen, these administrations, they're after guns.
Well, I think there was a little more to it. You know, Arizona was really and still is really at odds with the federal government. One of the reasons being the immigration law that they had passed.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, this happens, and there's some speculation that Loftner wasn't even after Giffords. He's probably after the judge.
Is that right?
That was a federal judge at the state level there, and he actually was the one that was killed. And that, you know, she was just a bystander and someone that got hit in the crossfire. But, you know, then again, she had been kind of against some of the things that the federal government was saying about Arizona. Mm-hmm. So there's so many things there. And I think, too, you know, like the Virginia Tech shooting, that supposedly that is one of the center for real some real psychological experiments.
There's
going
a lot
on.
Of those that you have to really look at and wonder that.
Yeah, it's kind of like a, how to say, like an academic, that these guys are getting money in the psychology departments to mess with people's brains. And, I mean, you can see it going on. Like you said, I mean, it's bringing out, like, the worst of people possible.
It's amazing to me that they can indoctrinate the youth so well.
Yeah, and I don't think they even need to do that. Just all the images on television, and you know the food that they eat. And
these
kids that are being put on these ridiculous drugs like Adderall and Prozac.
They're already brain dead. Just need to push them over.
What kind of generation is growing up with that? But that's my soapbox for the night. what do you see as like the is there a control system that's being put into place for people to not access these?
Access
their true potential?
Oh yeah, definitely. Of course.
what do you see as part
exactly
of the control?
I'll start with this. The main moral of that movie, Chronicles, is that if we had this power, that we would probably just destroy ourselves with it.
Yeah, because I've seen that movie. Have you seen it, Luke?
Yes.
And that's the thing. I mean, it's not going to become available to you because these kind of things, it's not something you're going to do after you get off work for a few hours every night. It's a lifelong commitment.
The Chronicle, basically, in the movie, these three kids find... these three teenagers, they find this mysterious ship or something.
It's a hole in the ground. It's a hole in the ground, and they are drunk at a party. They go down into the hole. They find this stone. They touch the stone, and all get nosebleeds and psychic powers. And
yeah, and one of the kids, and it's actually kind of from his point of view, because he's the one that's basically filming it.
Right.
Is you feel sorry for him because he. You know, he's abused, his mother is sick and dying, and he's abused by his alcoholic father. So you feel sorry for him, but as time progresses, you see that just how he becomes so corrupted by this power that he has, where he believes that he's a different
that's the ego.
Species.
That
basically.
Is exactly what keeps us from that power, is our egos.
So it would be pretty dangerous to... As we stand right now,
oh yeah,
if
definitely.
We access these things.
The ego to me is Satan. That is our biggest problem in our lives. That's every day. That is what we face. We're at war within our own selves, against ourselves.
Interesting. That's kind of
it's our personalities. It gets in the way of everything.
Wow.
It's basically you take all this that's in this other world. And you put it through this tiny little filter, that's our ego. And that's all you get, just this little small fraction.
So human nature messes it up in the end?
Oh, yeah.
Emphysema of the soul.
That's a good way to put it.
I like that.
Is that your soul? Is that your funk album title, Luke?
Funk is that supposed to like be the cure, metal. Man. That's the cure.
Call the doctor.
Ow. But what do you see, how is the control? I mean, is it chemical, is it mental, physical, all the things that are going on? Because Luke and I talk about
all that, yeah,
a
definitely.
Lot of chemical. He is really into talking
that,
about chemical
the main,
and drugs.
That's probably
drugs.
The main subject of our conversations 90% of the time.
It's safe to assume that they're attacking you every way they can. Through every food you eat, the air you breathe, the... shows you watch, through culture in general, through fads, you know, music, everything. Absolutely everything.
I got to ask the million-dollar question here, and Luke's going to laugh at this, but who would you say they are?
They?
Yeah.
That's hard to say exactly. I would think it would be the people that have the biggest interest and have the most money, the most capital, the biggest thing to achieve from making people subservient. I mean, it's the richest of the rich, and they're trying to set the future up for themselves, maybe their kids, so that there's no way we can ever overtake them.
Elitist royal families and their desire for a pure bloodline.
We have that would have access to the monatomic gold and
exactly.
These things that would that instead of they would take it for everybody, so that they're an elite and elect basically.
Mm-hmm. And if it indeed does what is claimed to do and makes people live hundreds of years, I mean it wouldn't take very long for all of us that are against that to die off, and they could keep on going.
Do you think that there's like suppressed technologies that they would have?
Oh yeah, definitely. Oh, no doubt. I have no doubt there's suppressed technologies. I mean, you look at that. You hear stories. They have to slowly give it to people, so they can of course make money off of you. You have to buy the new laptop, the new cell phone, and mm-hmm. it's a capitalistic process. It's greed, I think, in that respect, more than just wanting to keep it from people.
Proof of that is just going to the U.S. patent website and just researching some of these patent numbers that are questionable. It's invention after invention that you don't see in everyday life.
But yeah, that you're probably never going to see.
Right.
You might see in 30 years. The something like zero-point energy exists.
Yeah. Orgone.
Orgone, yeah. Get your orgone hat, Luke.
Oh, Welch.
Orgone accumulator hat,
orgone
bro.
Orgone accumulator hat.
I still haven't bought one yet. I've been looking into it.
You need to get a big, big triangle on top of your head or something?
Yeah that and the complimentary cloud burster you put in your yard.
Sounds cool.
No,
Wilhelm Reich.
I think, you know, after reading a little bit of William Reich's stuff, the antennas on top of the temples in Cambodia and I don't even know where else because I'm not that great at geography, but the antennas with the discs, the seven discs, you know, represent the chakras or whatever.
Right.
Those are probably orgone accumulators. I mean, would I be too far off?
That's exactly what they are. That's what I was talking about earlier, the centers. They're basically energy accumulators.
Yeah.
And if you can get all of those lined up, that's the superhuman state.
And you know, Tesla, you know, wanted to broadcast energy from huge towers. I mean, literally electricity. I mean, of course, you know, we have something similar with cell phone towers, but they, you know, they broadcast not a
right.
form
they
of
don't,
electricity,
they're not creating energy. Yeah.
But instead, we have all these clunky, like.
Obsolete
electrical
power
poles
lines.
And stuff like that.
Tesla was an interesting character.
Yeah, you mentioned ancient civilizations. I mean, do you feel that there was like a highly advanced civilization at one point?
Oh, of course, yeah. Well, like I said, if you're can access that inner world, there's no kind of anything standing in your way, the way I see it. And then people, ancient civilizations, I believe they were in contact with advanced beings. They could have actually been here physically on Earth, who knows, but either way they were getting information that they wouldn't be accessing otherwise.
What do you think happened to a civilization like that?
What happened to like the Egyptians,
or well, I mean, lack of a better term, like Atlantis or such, something like that?
What I understand is that Earth goes through pole shifts over so many thousands of years. I guess that is what happened to Atlantis. And I know there's talk of that might have been a result of some kind of weaponry that they had or something that stimulated that. But we know that by looking at fossils that the Earth's going to have another pole shift. Maybe, you know, we're overdue for it. It could happen any day. And basically what that means is the magnetic field will drop and the sun's rays will basically cook everything.
Yeah. How do you interpret, they say something like prophecy, like the Book of Revelations or Nostradamus or something like that. How do you interpret something like that?
The prophecies? Are you like talking about end times?
End times, yeah.
It all seems to correlate with the pole shift. The things in the Bible talks about, you know, the fire, the sky turning red, and all these things, they seem to be like symbols of what actually will occur, you know, and we know has occurred before, as it will happen again. When that Earth's magnetic field drops and the sun heats the Earth, the inner core will expand outward, and it will have super volcanoes and stuff, and the continents will break apart. It'll shift areas that are like sunny now. It'll have holes in them, and it'll just instantly frozen. I mean, it's just complete change. My understanding is that had occurred in the history of man, and we lived through it. And so I guess we will again, but it's just basically a reset. It's a concept called rewilding. It's part of anarcho-primitivism.
That our civilization
is going to revert back.
And then comes back.
We're never going to get back to the pure state like we're at. We're never going to choose to not think or choose not to speak and supposedly advance ourselves. It's going to be forced upon us. I mean, it's inevitable.
Forced upon us by something like a pole shift or by some other
right
entity?
A pole shift. Well, I don't know if there's some sort of advanced weaponry that could create a pole shift. I don't know that. Yeah. That's, I assume, possible. I don't know. There's, you know, they think the planet Nibiru, or however you pronounce
Nibiru.
It,
yeah.
is supposed to come back around, and maybe that might cause a pole shift.
Gravitational pull, because it's on a different axis, and supposedly.
Many think that it's somewhere out there and we just can't see it yet, but I don't see that.
Yeah, I don't really buy into that either.
I tend to look at
with it myself.
As that like a inner world, an inner situation more than a physical.
Right.
Being as part of mythology as it is.
Do you buy into the 2012 predictions?
That's interesting, because the way I understand it, that all the planets are going to align at that date that the Mayans predicted. I don't know if that's the case or not, but that's the way I've understood, that all the planets were going to basically be in one line through our galaxy. And if that's the case, that may somehow cause something to happen. It's hard to say, really.
Yeah, I personally think we'll all still be here.
I do too. I mean, it's like Y2K all over again.
Right. And there was something in 2000. There was an astronomical alignment.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more of a like the new age heralding the coming of a new age.
Right.
One time you were studying the powers of mass consciousness. You have any like specific examples that were tested, laboratory tests or anything like that from the mass consciousness and its like persuasion on the real world?
No. My understanding of mass consciousness is basically that through the understanding of the subconscious is how you affect people, manipulate their minds subliminally. You can get people all toward one direction, not by actually even telling them what to do, just by planting these little seeds and making them think that they come up with it, you know. And to me, that seems to be the easiest way to manipulate people. You don't go to somebody and tell them that you want them to do this. They're not going to do it. You have to manipulate their mind, make them think that they're doing it on their own.
Yeah, make them think that they're doing you a favor, or that you're.
And that's where the mass consciousness. Yeah. When you bring that on a large scale, through propaganda, you know, the media machine, things like that. They plant these little seeds, and let them grow.
Right. And the reason I ask that is because, you know, there's been all kinds of threats for our end times. You know, in the past couple of decades, how many times has that occurred? You know, the end of the world is near.
Well, last year.
Well, I think
it happened twice.
This is just part of this self-defeatism we're all locked into. We all are, like, obsessed with our own
self-destruction.
Self-destruction. I mean, it's just, like, the ultimate topic to us because it's unknown. We don't – most of us don't know what was going to happen when we die. And, I mean, it's just something we're obsessed with.
You could say from a psychological standpoint that when times get harder as they have, you know, in 2008 with the financial crisis and then the recession, you know, people really, you started seeing it a lot more.
Yeah.
That stuff has always kind of been there in the background, but you started seeing more of the end times craziness come out. I don't necessarily, you know, I believe personally there's something to it, but, you know, just leaving myself and my own beliefs out of it, you know, people, as they tend to lose hope, they tend to put hope into something else.
Right.
And like you saw with the whole Harold Camping debacle last year, people selling all their, you know, their all their items and giving away their life savings and preparing for the end.
Drinking the Kool-Aid.
And that was it. And the thing is, they wanted to drink it. They wanted to drink that Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
And when it didn't happen, as most of the world said, well, it's not going to. I believe he was just trying to, you know, all the talk of 2012 that had been going on for so long that he wanted to say, oh, it's going to happen 2011.
The self-destructive behavior is encouraged by society and brainwashing through all of these outlets because
they want you to defeat yourself.
Yeah, you fill up the prisons, you fill up the graveyards, you're out of their way, safe exactly. And sound.
Yeah, you listen to more gangster rap, you can fill up the prison, right?
Hey, why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Well, it's something that I heard on another podcast and something that I read, and it's basically from a someone that remained anonymous, but he was purported to be, said that he was a bigwig in the music industry in the early 90s, and he'd gone to a meeting, and at first he didn't know with other people from the music industry, and at first he didn't know who they were meeting with, and they were meeting with representatives of the private prison industry in the United States. And they talked to these music industry guys, and they said, well, we'd like you to really push this gangster rap stuff, you know.
Right.
You know, that had kind of come out organically, but we really want you to push it, and we really, you know, just sign more artists to do this gangster rap stuff because it will encourage this lifestyle of criminality, and it'll fill our prisons. And that was basically the gist of it. And he left the meeting feeling extremely uncomfortable, and then quit the music industry maybe about a year later. And he began to see that they went from basically like this kind of rap, like Public Enemy, Run DMC, to the more like Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre and all these different gangster rap elements that were in
it
there.
It did take a sudden shift.
Yeah, and it's ripe, and it happens right after this meeting.
You went from a big clock to a Glock.
Right, yeah.
nice analogy.
Yo, so this, they managed to pretty much brainwash people, even though the elements of people committing these type of crimes, because they really, in these communities, really had no hope anyway, but it made that lifestyle glamorous.
Oh, it is.
And you see kind of the same thing still going on, really. And then, pants down, you know, around the knees. And
you know, it's, they don't, you know, put good role models out there.
No, they're not
giving you the names of people that are, you know, actually worth looking up to.
And I think they do this all the time.
You have to seek those people out and do some research.
Of course, your brother over here really likes Jersey Shore, Travis. So, you know.
I don't like it that much, but I mean, it is entertaining. I'll admit. I'll admit. With nothing else to do.
Well, Jersey Shore.
I'd have to disagree.
I really find it funny in this podcast where we talk about such deep things. We actually said the words Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, and Jersey Shore in the space of about like 5 minutes.
You can be spiritual still listening to Snoop Dogg, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're not going to deny yourself junk food if you're on a diet every once in a while, or you're just going to just drop your diet altogether.
Yeah, I mean, I have my own guilty pleasures myself, so, you know. I can't. Celebrity ghost stories would probably be mine.
Ghost Adventures?
Nah, I don't watch Ghost Adventures.
That's your favorite show, don't lie.
Oh, I love Zach Baggins, man. It's like these guys go in and get off the gym and go ghost hunting.
Gym tan ghost hunting.
But, Travis, we want to thank you for coming on, man. You've been
thanks for having
awesome
me.
Guest.
I appreciate it.
Some pretty interesting views. Luke, you have anything you want to add about it?
What's some of the topics you covered? What about some books? Recommend maybe some books?
I think I mentioned it all. Most of the books I read are about alchemy and you know, things dealing with the inner world. One of the pivotal books is the one I mentioned, Julian Jaynes, The Origin of Consciousness and the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind. That's a real cornerstone of the understanding of ancient cultures, how they understood the world, and gives us a model we could achieve to reach again. A Secret of the Golden Flower, that's a really good book about alchemy. It's hard to come up with a bunch of books, but those are two of the main ones.
Right.
The Fourth Way, that's a very advanced system of self-awareness. If people aren't familiar with it,
we'd have to have you back on, Travis. I think there's a
love
lot.
To.
We really just don't even scratch the surface.
Yeah, got a lot to say.
Very interesting ideas, especially about language. That's for the
well,
thing
just
that
nothing
I've come
I
away
I come
this.
Up with. It's a lot of people have been after that for a long time.
Have you thought about writing your own material, writing your own book?
You know, it's I really just kind of took a bunch of elements from a lot of different sources and just kind of mixed together with my own little.
That's for the most part what authors do anyway is make
sure.
their own
so.
Assumptions.
I think if I would write a book, it's to convince everybody that they need to try to be schizophrenic. You think
out,
that would
go
sell?
Go hang out in the psych ward for a while.
Go hang out with Call Out Cody.
Go hang out with the people that see God.
Yeah, go hang out with him. Turn into cat heads. Chris, do that as a soundbite, man, for, you know, turn into cat heads. Make an introduction. Well, I just want to say in closing that this has been very interesting. I think I've gotten a lot out of it. I think Luke has, too.
Yeah.
I don't know about Chris, but the silent partner over here. But I want to thank you for coming on, Travis.
Thanks again for having me.
And Luke for bringing you over. And just a couple of things. We are now number 123 on Podomatic. And we got a good boost there with Micah Hanks. We hope that any last week, and we hope that anybody that has heard us doesn't think we're too crazy and too off the wall. But we're trying to have.
Yeah. Give us suggestions, please.
Yeah. Send us suggestions. And you can send that to conspiranormal@gmail.com. conspiranormal. Chris,
think about it.
Chris hates the spelling. And like us on Facebook. The same spelling. But we want to thank everybody for listening. Is there anything you want to add, Luke?
You want to do an Alex Jones scream off or not?
I guess we could do an Alex Jones scream off.
What was it today?
What was he talking about?
Feminist making men sit down to
feminist
pee.
Feminist
want to
make men sit. Want to make them sit down to pee.
I refuse to be a nation of men who sit to pee.
Absolutely refuse. I won't do
right
it.
Now.
They're trying to take my guns and telling me that I can't stand up to pee.